Hey, this is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. This is the Expecting Arielle's podcast. Thanks for being here today. Really appreciate you. If you check the show notes, there's a link there for the new three-part series, Arielle Rehab, which I will drop to inboxes. Go ahead and sign up there. And also the mini course by Wrap Your Head Around Silks. You can easily log on to the student portal with that link. So today we have Dina Salko. She is the owner and artistic director of Moth Live Entertainment, and she's based in Colorado. She had a life of gyrotonics. We talk a lot about that because I personally don't know a lot, and she explains that practice. And she goes into talking about her five ectopic pregnancies, all within a year. And she successfully had a daughter, so she has two daughters, and has recently, in the last 3 weeks, undergone surgery to correct her diastasis recti. So lots to talk about in this episode. Let's get started.
So my name is Dina Markham Salko. I am 43 years old, and I was introduced to the world of aerial and circus, let's see, 21 years ago now, 21 years ago. So my background, though, I grew up in California, and I kind of bounced around a lot. My dad was a pilot, but both of my parents are artists. My mom's a painter and my dad's a musician. And so I just grew up around all different types of art. Was a competitive gymnast and then became a ballet dancer because I hated competition. But that's kind of funny because ballet is highly competitive, just in a different way. So, and then I went to college for dance, and I have a BFA in dance from Marymount Manhattan College. And I graduated in 2001, and that's in New York City. And so we all know what happened in 2001, which was unfortunately 9/11. And there were, you know, no jobs for aspiring dancers. So, but November, after September 11th happened, there was an audition notice. And my friends were like, you have to go to this. And it was for dancers that could do gymnastics. And there was going to be a jazz number routine you had to learn. And I was a ballet dancer, and that terrified me. And my friend said, you're coming anyway. And I was the one that they kept. And it was a company called Anti-Gravity. I'm sure you've heard of it. They were one of the first companies to
really Anti-Gravity.
Yeah, they were like one of the first to take Cirque style performing.
Yes. Wait, was it based in New York City?
Yeah. Yeah. With Chris.
Oh my.
So I met a ton of people through that, but I actually never ended up performing with them because of 9/11. There was just so many things going on and very few gigs at the time.
Oh my goodness.
But he, Chris Harrison introduced me to Chelsea Bacon, who ended up becoming my first aerial coach in New York City, and to this day is still one of my biggest influences in my career, for sure. So that's just a little bit of my background.
Okay, so every single time I meet a woman from this amazing Facebook group, like, you know, what you had said on the post is that you do gyrotonics and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. Like, I, like, you and I would have been like friends, like, you know, like, because I've been dancing since I was a kid, and I didn't go this path. I went the path of commercial dance. Mm-hmm. Like, I ended up in LA, but like, I'm geeking out. Yay. Because yeah, like, I mean, that's, yeah, I'm amazed. Okay. So that's awesome. So
yeah,
gymnast, ballerina.
Yeah. And so gyrotonic, when I was in New York City in college, I can't remember what number, like, I am in one of the very first, like, sets of, I want to say I'm in the first 300 ever gyrotonic teacher group ever. Like, I know that sounds like
really
a number, but like, there's,
wow,
there's a lot.
Oh yeah.
But it might be even less than that. I can't remember. But yeah, I worked, I mean, Julio himself, like, actually did our certifications.
I mean, that's like me saying with my Pilates certification that, like, I was like five people from, you know, Joe Pilates. So that was a big deal.
It is a big deal. And I mean, that, so I became a gyrotonic teacher. I started doing it in 1999. And then I became certified, I think officially, 1998, because then I got certified in 2000. So that kind of, because I was a terrible waitress in New York City. So I needed a job. So that became my job and my family.
I would make a terrible waitress as well.
I was terrible at it. I tried.
I never tried to be a waitress, but it would not go well. So, okay, there's a lot of different directions I want to go in with this, but let's go gyrotonics first. Okay. I act like we know nothing about it because I know very little about gyrotonics. Can you please explain what exactly it is, like gyrotonics for dummies, what the benefits are, why you're so drawn to it?
Yeah, well, it's so funny because, you know, I don't have a tower, for instance, I don't have a machine with me where I live now. And I'm kind of going backwards. So it's just like the philosophies have stayed with my life since that. And I've gone in and out of being a teacher and being, going back to trainings and whatnot, but I've used it throughout my career as a dancer, as a circus performer, and as a circus coach. And certainly just in my everyday life because of the way that we breathe. So gyrotonic is a form of movement. I would call it a movement therapy that is much more circular based. It is all about the spirals and finding our connection through the spine and that movement. And I haven't described it in a really long time, so bear with me. But if you think of Pilates is a bit more linear. And gyrotonic is just a lot more circular. Both are super beneficial, and actually different bodies at different times need different things. But gyrotonic was developed on a lot of professional dancers. So the old movements are actually what are the most difficult ones to do, right? So Julio has pared it down to where somebody with an extreme physical disability could still benefit from doing it because he's pared it down to this energetic level that's so subtle. So yeah, there's lots of different machines that are involved. So like,
okay. Yeah. So that was a really good explanation because I'm a Pilates instructor and it is very linear. It's very line driven for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. So I always thought gyrotonics was about the machinery, but it's not really. It's about that way of moving.
Yeah.
And then you use the machines to assist or make things. Hey, what is it, Bean? Bean. Come on, Mama's recording. Do you want to say hi to Dina?
Hi.
Would you like to say hi to Dina? Here. Sometimes I let her listen in on my earbuds and she gets into it.
Hi, sweetie.
Get outside.
No, you're not. Dina's not outside. She's in another state. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into how... I'm going to get into your story a little bit later, maybe. Let's get into how you work with people, how you help people, your studio, right?
Well, I don't have a studio anymore. Yeah, I'll go through my circus background a little bit. Okay, so yeah, so I started doing aerial in New York City in 2001. And in 2003, after training for quite some time with various coaches, Elsie Smith from NECA guided me towards coaching for Circus Smirkus as a job. So one summer in 2003, I was pretty young. I ended up in Vermont for the summer coaching. And that's when I think that was my first real, like real coaching experience. I mean, I had done some here and there, but, and of course I had taught for so many years doing gyrotonic. So I had already been a teacher, but, so that was really why I became like gyrotonic is so intrinsic in how I teach circus because I had, hadn't learned how to coach circus. I had only learned how to teach people how to move, right? So it became very natural. It was like, oh, this trick is, you know, this is how I'm going to teach it because it's based on this movement and a place where we need to initiate movement from. And it became very holistic, my approach to teaching aerial specifically. So I ended up in Vermont. Lots of different ways I could go here. So I'm not going to go through my total personal stuff yet. But career-wise, I ended up coaching at Circus Mercus for many summers. Ended up in New York City. I had met my former husband there, and we moved to New York City. And then when my first daughter was born in 2007, we ended up moving back to Vermont when she was 3 months old because Elsie and Serenity offered me a job to coach at NECA. So I ended up in Vermont, and that's where I started my company, Moth. At the time, I called it Moth, which stands for Movement of the Heart. It still does. And I called it Moth Aerial Arts because, you know, I was in the circus industry there, and I wanted to kind of be different than what was already there. And I had the support of Elsie and Serenity. But I ended up divorcing and moving to Colorado, where I had family. And I changed the name to Moth Poetic Circus because I always felt like contemporary circus was very poetic to me. The movement was very poetic, and I'm drawn to so many other art forms. So, and I really just loved the idea of circus more than aerial dance because the aerial dance had such a different connotation to what I understood it to be initially. And it just didn't resonate with me. And then I was going into the world in Colorado where aerial dance was so prevalent. So I had to differentiate myself as well. And now I'm actually in the process, and you're the first to hear this publicly, but we are now, this week, relaunching as Moth Live Entertainment, which is a new, exciting, bigger than I could possibly even have imagined my company to have become.
Okay, and so what's this new iteration of it? Is it a little bit more focused on... What's the difference of the focus?
Also, within that, when I moved to Colorado and met my new husband, we opened a circus school together, which I will tell you all about my other pregnancy story within that in a minute. But so I did open a studio in Denver. I had it for 5 full years. I closed it right before the pandemic on purpose. Not even knowing about the pandemic.
Oh my God, that's really good, right?
It was crazy. But my lease was up March 31st, 2020.
Wow.
We were putting masks on as people were taking things out and I was selling stuff. It was really weird. And also, like, it just made so much sense that that was the transition. And of course, you know, as we all know, there was nothing that we've been doing nothing for the last 2 years, or at least a lot of us haven't been able to do a lot. But I was closing my studio to focus only on the shows because directing shows, creating shows, working with people, hiring amazing professionals, and, you know, putting a show together and all of the creating and the art and the collaboration and all of that is where my heart is. And so running a studio, being a mom, being a director, like being a teacher was just too many hats. I really couldn't do it all even.
And when you say directing, these are shows that you were hired to do an event for, or they're your own?
We have, until now, Moth Live Entertainment is taking a different direction, but all of Moth Poetic Circus's shows were self-produced.
Oh, okay, got it.
Basically sold out every single one of them since.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we did really, really well in Denver, and we have an agent now, and we are now, like, I'm on the other side of it. I became a business instead of, you know, I don't, it's just so hard to be an artist, right? So, and even through the pandemic, I kept seeing all this, and it's not to put anything down or any direction, but we just, my husband and I decided, who he helps me so much in this, but that we were going to produce shows that would be lucrative, that would be sellable, that would be, you know, that is art. You know, I like the saying, art is meant to be consumed. Like, what is it if nobody sees it or nobody wants it? Like, is it just for yourself? Great. That's fine too. Right. But for me, like, I am a business. I am an artist, and the two can go together. And I think that we, as a society, have kind of forgotten that, and or it's shunned for some reason in this country to meld.
You know, Dina, I feel like you're just, you might be in a different world over there in Colorado or your circle, because in the commercial world, that is not shunned at all.
No, I think it is definitely not. I think you're in LA, right?
Yeah.
You are in commercial space, and that's absolutely you have to be in. So I think definitely it's not Colorado. I think it's the general art world beyond.
Right. It's the art, it's right? Like, we are artists, yes, and we must suffer a little bit, at least all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe you're more in that world than I am, because I also have it. Well, I also have an entertainment company with the partner, and it's called Grand Rev Creative. And we are just like, somebody needs to do a party, we staff all of the entertainment for it. Awesome. So no, I'm with you, but I don't have that element in my life because I swim here in this money making.
Yeah. Well, LA is a very, very different story. And I think, and it's an interesting, it is just an interesting conversation, you know, between
all agree.
Those things. But so going back when I had my studio, I, let's see, we closed in 2015. We opened in 2015. And at the time I was trying to get pregnant. Had married my second husband, and we...
Is he also a circus person?
He is not. He's a business person.
Okay.
I learned most of my business side from him. However, he's been a concert promoter since the early 90s. His family's had a music festival in Baltimore called Hot August Music Festival for 3 decades. So definitely in that, in a world where he was able to bridge the gap for me. And he had a lot to learn about the circus industry and or me as an artist and where I wanted to go. And when he finally understood that, and he finally understood where we could go together, then it just kind of became magic, us as a team in creating what we're doing and the shows together. But so we were trying to get pregnant, and I ended up having 5 miscarriages.
Wow.
While first opening the studio.
And you were like 35 at the time?
Yep. Well, let's see. Yep. 35, 36.
Wow.
35. And yeah, 35.
And this was many years ago, but can you get into like,
yeah, so this is
what happened?
This is the real stuff, right? Where I'm surrounded by all these young aerialists, young kids, you know, early 20s, early 30s, nobody was a parent that was around me. One, and I already had a child, so I was already a mom, but nobody knew what I was going through. And it was really challenging, because running a studio, if you know anything about that, and you know it because you run a business, you know, you're asked everything of, right? And also expected to do everything for everyone. And no matter what you do for people, they don't like it. Right. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in that situation. And so not only was I stressed running the space, trying to figure out what it was supposed to be while trying to also be an artist, I was having all of these losses, and they ended up being ectopic pregnancies, most of them. Nobody, which is also life threatening, also kept me from training. So,
okay. So they were in the fallopian tube?
Correct. So
I had all of them?
Two confirmed, and the other ones, the two on the bookended ones, the first one and the last one. And the three in the middle, they suspect were also, but just they took care of themselves. My last one ended up with an emergency surgery with the removal of my right fallopian tube. So it just wouldn't die. It wouldn't die. Those cells would not die. So it would have killed me. So I went in and they took it out, couldn't save my tube. And then we decided to go through IVF. So,
okay, Dina, yeah. are these considered abortions then?
You know, so in some circles, some people think that they are, but what happens with an ectopic pregnancy is there's no heartbeat. It basically turns into cancer. They give you actually like a drug called methotrexate, which is a form of chemo. I think chemo, or at least it's definitely something they use for cancer. It is human cells, but there's no heartbeat. There is no baby. So there are some people that consider it, because they're uneducated about it, that it would have been an abortion, but it's not, because it's just a group of cells that are going to kill you eventually if they don't stop growing.
Okay, there's a couple different ways that a pregnancy can turn into a cancerous situation.
Right.
And this is called, just so that I can be clear, what is it called again?
That would be a molar pregnancy, and that turns.
Right, molar, right.
Yeah, this is different. But I just say it's cancer-like because the cells just keep growing, right?
Okay.
So you have to, like, because it is human tissue, so they're replicating and replicating and replicating, but it's in the wrong place. There is no heartbeat. There is no, it doesn't even look like any, you know, it's just glob, right? So.
Okay.
So that's an ectopic. I mean, and I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but that's, you know, as much as I learned, and it's been a while, but yeah, it's not possible to transfer it to the uterus, you know, like some people think. It is just
okay. And so by the end of that process, they've taken the right fallopian tube.
Yeah. And then found zero reason for me to be going through this. So that was also frustrating, right? Because you kind of want answers.
So basically, they couldn't tell you why.
Right. And when the doctor cut me open, she's like, oh, you look beautiful. And there's like no endometriosis. There's no scarring. There's nothing. Went through all the tests, you know, and I think, you know, I have low thyroid, which I found out through that process. It could just have been that I didn't have enough or something to get the embryo the cell or the little fertilized egg where it needed to go. So I decided.
And your first pregnancy was totally normal.
Yeah. I mean, I might have had a miscarriage right before, but it was so early that, you know, I wouldn't have known. But I think that I did. But then, yeah, I was so much younger too. You know, I was 28 when I had my first kid.
Well, here's my question. So you guys were trying, so you were taking pregnancy tests every month. Mm-hmm. Had you not taken the pregnancy tests, what would you have learned about it in a good amount of time?
With the ectopics?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it was extremely painful.
Okay. Yeah, you would have known.
There was a medical way for me to know, because it's in the wrong spot, and it could, you know, it basically could burst and you could bleed out. So that's why it's super painful. So yes, I would have known something was up had I not been trying and been really aware of that.
Within the process of those five miscarriages, how long was that? Like, was it like a year?
Yeah, it was within a full like year and maybe year and a half. It's hard. Like, I'm like going back going, when was the last? So I had my surgery 2016. So it was July of 2016. So, and remember I had opened the studio in 2015. So I was going through all of this while trying to build a business.
Was the business a good distraction, or was it just the opposite? It was just so hard all the time.
I think it was both. You know, okay, at the time, okay. I'm thinking like I was excited to have it. I was, you know, doing pretty well. And yeah, I was healing, but then I couldn't do much. And that was hard and confusing probably for my students, you know, when I wasn't able to, you know, get up on the apparatus and show them stuff anymore. And, you know.
And did you tell them that you were just having some health issues or?
I don't remember what I told them. I think a few of the moms, like of the, my younger students, a few of the moms knew what was going on. So.
Okay. You had kids there. Okay.
Yeah. Too much. And then, you know, the older people that I was around probably just didn't have
if you with it, so. Well, it sounds obviously it's been a while and yeah. You guys it's been a process. Why don't you just keep on telling your story? Yeah. And then I'll
so then we did go through IVF. I just was like, well, I'm healthy and there's nothing wrong with my uterus, just and there's nothing wrong with either of us generally, put it where it needs to go. So it was intense. We went through it and we only had to go through it once, which was pretty amazing. And so my second daughter was born on January 7th, 2017.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Little rainbow baby. And she is 5 now and will be going into kindergarten in the fall already, which is crazy.
Oh my goodness. So you've got a kindergartner, you've got a...
And a high schooler.
Oh, so your other child was like...
9 and a half.
Way.
Yeah, they're 9 and a half years apart.
9 and a half years mm-hmm. apart. Got it. So your first daughter is from your first marriage? Yep. Okay, got it. Yeah. Wow. Okay, and then now you have this entertainment company.
Yep.
Are you performing, teaching at all?
I'm not doing much. We moved to a small mountain town in Colorado, and what I ended up doing was directing the high school musical.
Okay.
While I'm waiting for things to open up again, which they're slowly happening. But that was really fun. My oldest is a musical theater kiddo now. She was a Circus Murcus performer for a couple years, clown and hula hooper. And but she's going the direction of musical theater, so I got to nice. Help direct her show Into the Woods, which was really fun and gave me a different, you know, eye into directing. It's always good to do different things. But yeah, with Moth Live Entertainment, we are booking our shows again, and as of right now, we are confirmed to start, which I can't give too much information about yet, but we are going to. Confirmed to start January
2023. Oh my goodness.
3 full years of not performing.
And then you're going to be performing with Moth again.
Well, I'm just directing. I don't.
Okay. Okay.
And I love not performing.
Now. Okay. Got it. Got it.
I am talking like this. This is great because you're not seeing me. I'm like, it's terrifying.
I don't know. Oh, no, I but that doesn't matter. I mean, I really believe that. I just turned 45 a week and a half ago.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. And my body is not what I want it to be. Not to say that many people would notice, because I just had like the tiniest bit of diastasis recti, and it's taken, and I also have gut issues. So what happens when you have gut issues and bloating and a little DR is that the DR doesn't want to...
It's not helping you out any.
No, because it's going the wrong direction. Like, it wants to keep everything on stretch because you have all this extra air in your system. And so it just takes longer to heal. And I keep on having these bloating episodes. Yeah. And it just doesn't help.
Yeah. So no matter what... So that's kind of where, you know, that next piece of it is like, okay, so I had... 2 babies, almost 10 years apart, very different
bodies. And was that IVF pregnancy? Like, was there anything out of the ordinary in the actual pregnancy?
Not really, no, except, I mean, I burst my blood vessels in my eyes because I was barfing so much. But that's typical for IVF because there's so much more hormone in your body from going through the process. You have to inject yourself.
So you were super nauseous. Was it, was it just the first trimester?
No. It's a long time.
Did you have that thing that, what's it called when you have it the whole time?
No, it wasn't the whole time. I did get a respite, but it was pretty intense for like, I would say 20 weeks. But yeah, I can't remember that either, but yeah.
That's rough.
But no, other than that, pretty normal. Both natural deliveries, very quick. But so, you know, because of gyrotonic, I think, and just my natural body, my abs are really strong. I use my core very well. And being an aerialist and gymnast and dancer and all those things. And I think they told me I was too strong and I cannot do anything. So I had to stop training halfway through my second pregnancy because it was ripping. And I think just because I was so tight.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that my skin is, the way that my muscle structure, everything, it just was like, yep, pop, and it never went back. And so,
okay. Oh,
this is the interesting thing is like, we, you know, I follow the forums, I read people's comments, and I think that there's such a, I mean, one, there's that pressure on women and especially on moms that we need to do everything and be everything and fix everything ourselves. And, you know, there are lots of people that and women that can fix their diastasis when naturally and like with PT and the right support and all that stuff. And we should have that no matter what you end up doing. But there's some people that cannot actually fix it with exercise. And so after a really long time and being in a place where I was able to make the decision, I ended up having cosmetic surgery because they won't fix a diastasis in a woman without it being that unless you have an emergency hernia happen from it. So, and I'm actually only 3 weeks post-op right now. So very, very new, but I am so excited to have my abs sewn together again. I can already feel a difference in my lower back. And then I get the aesthetic part too, because, you know, I am in the entertainment business, but that wasn't the main reason. The main reason was to get that diastasis fixed. And I think of it more as like a long-term health benefit.
Oh yeah.
My physical health. It is for my mental health too, because it's so frustrating. And I think it is still so very, what's the word? Taboo to talk about, you know, getting, okay, yes, it's plastic surgery, but there's, you know, so many health benefits to it for certain women. And, you know, I got really nervous. I was like, when you asked me to get, you know, to do an interview, I asked my very dear friend, Amy Flora Mongrew, who used to be an aerialist as well. But she, I said, should I talk about it? And she's like, hell yeah. Gotta talk about it, you know.
Well, Dina, I'm really appreciating you talking about it. And I can appreciate the tons of emotions around it, but I would love to get into this because you're telling me the story and my perspective on what you just said would first be a health reason, not quote unquote plastic surgery elective, you know, just because you care about what you look like. That is not what went through my mind at all.
Right.
So I wonder if that went through your mind first or if there's like a added attitude or a thought process around it in the community that you live in. Like,
I think,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. I think generally, well, you live in LA and I think that's certainly definitely a different world. I think,
yeah,
like,
no, I think it really does color everything I hear about because it's different.
Because I think plastic surgery is much more the norm. And I think it's becoming, I mean, especially with, you know, people talking, like celebrities talking about what they've done and whatnot, like it's becoming, you know, acceptable in the larger, you know, sense of things. People aren't like hush hush about it anymore. But just generally, I think it, you know, and it's also a place of privilege too, right? Where it costs a lot of money and not everyone who needs it can. And that's frustrating because it's a medical thing and it should be covered. And I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, right? And so that's also just one of those things in that, you know, what I've gone through in my life, having gone through that feeling of shame of having all of those miscarriages, of going through a divorce, of, you know, remarrying, all of these things that I've been through, going through the studio, being a business owner, you know, trying to be an artist, all of these things all kind of culminate in this one little but very big thing that I just did. And I can tell you that I already feel like a different person. And I am so grateful that I went through it and that my mind was at the right place to be able to go through something like this in a way that is not only changing me physically, but changing me on the metaphysical level and the emotional level, and definitely my mental health for sure.
Dina, how many fingers of separation did you have on your DR before the surgery?
I think the biggest was 2. It wasn't a lot, but it was long, and I'm very short.
It was long. Like, where did it start and where did it end?
She told me, my doctor, my surgeon, sewed me all the way up. Up to down. So
pubic bone to sternum. Uh-huh.
And I'm very short torsoed, so I don't know if that makes any difference. But I said, oh, you know, because there was, you know, like I could, you know, stick my fingers like all the way through my belly button, you know, that kind of thing. And it just feels
gross. Yeah.
But so it was wide in the center, but it, you know, tapered.
Like, okay.
You know, sliver.
Okay. I'm going to, yeah. I really am so curious. So do they have to cut your skin to get to that, or are they doing it laparoscopically?
So I did the full tummy tuck, which meant that I have now a scar from hip to hip on my bikini.
Okay.
But
okay. So horizontal.
Yep. It's a little half shape, you know, it's like a half circle. So it follows the bikini line. You have to get a really amazing surgeon. So, but yeah, she's amazing. And, yes, she took out the skin and all that extra skin, all of those stretch marks, all of the extra little fat that I had from the last 2 years of doing nothing. It's all gone. It's pretty amazing.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
My abs again, even though I'm still swollen.
Okay. So
I'm excited.
Here's my question, because the line that is between the abs and the actual muscles themselves, mm-hmm. I don't understand how they sew muscle back together.
Well,
because they can't.
They can't,
can they?
Really? But what they do is they suture it so that they, in the hopes that the
muscle fibers grow back together. Yeah,
so that it's like, it's crazy. That's what that's why I have such restrictions right now, is because they don't want those sutures.
Right.
Muscle itself, right? So, but yeah.
I've never heard of anyone getting this surgery, and that's crazy because I'm sure it happens a lot.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Anytime you see a woman now, I mean, and I would say, especially in LA, if you see a woman with, you know, kids walking down the street and her stomach is fairly flat, you know, unless she's really
that tall, might have happened.
Unless she's really tall, I would say I'm going to go on the 60 to 80% chance she probably had something done.
You know, I think this is how I survive in this city, because I am a drug virgin and I'm a surgical virgin in my mind. Mm. Like, I don't assume any of this. Like, I'm just like, no, people don't do things. Yeah, they do.
Well, that's what I'm starting to go, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
There's no way. There's no. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been having a lot of conversations with this doctor who's on this podcast a lot. And she's like, okay, you cannot stitch together muscle. This is, you know, people think you can, but you can't. So I'm like, how does that work? Okay, suturing. And then they grow back together, and then you do PT. Is this true?
Yes. I am doing everything eventually I possibly can. No, actually, I have PT this afternoon. I am doing everything I possibly can because I'm going through this as like, this is my catalyst to get my back to a place where I know I feel really good. Like I have a torn labrum in my hip that doesn't usually bother me, but every once in a while it does. And because everything else is loose and I'm not hypermobile in the medical sense of hypermobile, but I'm really flexible. And so my joints, you know, everything else does extra work. And when I don't have that, like, the abs
stability
and, yeah, the stability in the front in the same way that I used to and like just so open. I talk about the difference between gyrotonic and Pilates. Like I need Pilates right now, not gyrotonic. I don't need the openness. I mean, there's lots of
that's the other huge difference between the two practices. Yeah. I'm starting to understand it now. Thank you.
Well, there, I mean, advanced stuff you do, it's
I mean, yeah, I'm sure strength is part of it.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah. Huge part of it. And it's like very small, but a lot of it initially is just opening. Right. And I need the other. When I was the most strong and the most healthy feeling was when I was, I stood in for Serenity Smith Fortune when she was going through her pregnancies or her last pregnancy. And so I did their twin duo act with Elsie Smith. So
wait, is this a trapeze artist?
Yeah. So they were the founders of NECA in Vermont.
Okay.
And they did a twin act. They were on Cirque du Soleil. I think they were in Santa Monica. Anyway, but they had this a duo trapeze act that they did. So when Serenity went on maternity leave, I stood in for her. And when so duo trapeze was really like that, it's very linear and square and narrowing and all the things. Right.
So Dina, when is the last time you focused at all on your circus training? Like, was it a couple years ago?
The last time I performed in our last Nutcracker Circus in 2019 as a character performer. And I performed in 2017 on my Lyra as the Sugar Plum Fairy. And that was probably the last time I really did anything specifically aerial. It was 6 years ago.
And is it a goal of yours to go back to that or no?
You know, I said to one of my friends here who's an aerial teacher, she's the only one in this town. And I said, you know, I think just for myself, I want to create an act, but just for myself, not for the world, not to gig, not even to be in my shows. I just want to, I just miss it because it's a language that my body understands and a way for me to be physically active. And just kind of find that feeling of joy again. And that joy of flight, which I so crave.
Oh yeah. Okay. That, you know, Dina, I actually took notes because I'm like, I'm not going to forget to tell her about this. So when you're talking about plastic surgery and kind of like the stuff around it, I want to explain to you my perspective because this is very interesting perspective. So I've been in LA for 20 years and I had this old group of friends who I saw on my birthday because somebody else had a baby shower. I'd known them for 20 years and they are some of the most real women I've known here. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that whole like stereotypical LA thing. Mm-hmm. But I was sitting on the couch having, you know, just watching my child, and the rest of them were in a circle laughing because they were trying to play this game of guess who has had Botox. And it was like half out of the eight.
Yeah.
And I was like looking at them, and I'm also Chinese American.
Okay.
So I don't look my age. And so I'm looking at them like they're crazy. Because I'm just like, why would you touch your phone? Like, you're not on camera anymore. Like, why do you, like, what is wrong with you guys?
That's so funny.
And then on the other side, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe because my college experience sounds like I would run into the same type of people that maybe you're surrounded by in Colorado or maybe your art world. So I went to Oberlin College. Do you know that college?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, super, super crunchy, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, the opposite of LA, pretty much the polar opposite. Yep. And I lived and swam in that world and did the modern dance program and everything.
Yeah.
So like to go from that to that, it's kind of like both like pushed together in my cells.
Yes. Yes. Well, I just want to add to that, that I grew up, my parents were yogis. So I grew up in crunchy California world. You know, my parents were disciples of Swami Satchidananda, who brought, you know, Hatha yoga to the United States in the 60s.
All right. So yeah, so I completely understand that like dichotomy between that naturalist feeling world and that extremely not natural world, right? And there's that, there is a conflict of the conflict there. And I feel like a lot of women have that conflict naturally, not even realizing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And I think that's for sure probably where my hesitation was initially, but then it just became so clear to me that it was a health, you know, once I wrapped my head around that, it's pretty easy for me to get to where I need to be for whatever that is, like for my health, for long-term health. My husband is very supportive of that as well. You know, most of like, we're like, you know, we don't ask each other, you know, about expenses that have to do like massage, physical training, exercise equipment. Like we don't question each other on that because that's health, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, Dina, even if it was more of a, like, you want to look a certain way, who cares?
That too.
Like,
no, and I'm just
yeah,
like,
oh, who cares? Yeah,
I also get to like rock this body for the next, you know, however many years it holds up. So I'm pretty excited that that's the, you know, it's like, that wasn't the initiation for me. It wasn't the impetus, rather. It wasn't the impetus to go there. But I'm excited about that part for sure.
No, for sure. And, you know, honestly, I think that the reason why it sits totally fine with me that I'm in this little bit plasticky world in LA and then also have that other side is because it all comes down to, in my mind, do what you need to do for yourself.
Definitely.
Like whichever, from whichever spectrum it is, if you need to go into the forest and hug trees and like be in nature and divorce that entire world, do it. If you need to be like me, like I want to make shitloads of money doing what I love to do.
Yes, exactly.
Right? That's what I want.
Yes.
I don't, you know, then go do it. And I really feel like it's very relevant right now with what's going on with Roe.
Totally.
Roe versus, it's very relevant because it's bringing up this whole thing of like, we should be autonomous beings and do what you want. Take care of your family. Take care of your body. Be healthy. Be well. Be joyful.
And
screw everything else.
And mind your own business.
Mind your own fucking business. Like get your mouth out of my body.
Well, and that was the other thing too. It's like learning, like talking about the ectopic and like learning, like seeing all these memes, and I'm like, people learn anatomy. One, learn the anatomy of the woman's body. Or
yes,
or trans men, like whoever you're talking about, somebody with a uterus doesn't necessarily have a vagina. Okay, so let's just even go there. Like they're two different things.
No, it's maddening. It's maddening.
And like learn what an ectopic actually is. Go to a doctor and find out what happens. Like, you know, and like I, you know, and you're not going to change somebody's mind. There's certain people you're not going to change their mind, but like science is science and kind of like it. I kind of like it. So, you know,
yeah,
there's some things, but yeah, the people that, that post stuff about certain things just like kind of laugh and chuckle. I'm like, oh gosh, you don't know anything about a woman's body or about this vessel.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I don't even think it matters, but I was a poli sci major and I was going to go into politics. Mm-hmm. And this, like this out of many, you know, I also have a Blasian child. I'm Asian. My partner is Black. And, you know, I'm like, all you people who have problems with all this stuff, you need to mind your own business.
Oh my gosh.
Because if it was the opposite, like somehow your child doesn't have the same rights as other people because of the color of their skin or the gender or the decisions they make about their gender and their sexuality. Like, I mean, I don't even know if you need to be like, I've always been left of the spectrum, but I don't even think you need to be.
It doesn't matter. It's just a nunya.
It doesn't matter.
It's a nunya business. Is that how I like to, it's just a nunya situation. And I wish people would really. Yeah, I mean, especially the politicians, of course, but.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, Dina, I really appreciate, I know that you went through a little bit of a mental process before you got on the podcast. This is public. It goes out to the world. And I really 100% believe that for all of the ladies who've come on this podcast and like bare their soul, there are women out there. There are women out there that you might be saving their entire life.
Well,
by sharing your story.
That vulnerability piece is huge. I am currently, this time for me, have you heard, do you know who Alexandra Billings is?
Why have I heard that name?
Well, she's a trans woman and she is changing the world. And she has a book out that just came out called This Time for Me, I believe. That's why I'm like challenged on the name because I'm like enthralled with this book right now. But she is amazing and she has no idea how much she's changed my life in just the last couple of weeks of reading her book while I'm healing and going through something that is very much, you know, gender affirming for me, even, and reading a book about a trans woman, and her vulnerability is profound and has been profoundly impacted. Has had a profound impact on me just in the last couple of weeks of reading it, and or maybe only a week. I can't remember when I started it. I read fast. But so that's also gave me that courage to be like, no, you got to be vulnerable because you never know what somebody hears and just goes, oh, you know,
yeah,
like, but in whatever direction, like they might hear the IVF piece. They might hear the, oh my gosh, the ectopic piece. They might hear, oh, she had a studio. Maybe I want to do that. Like, there's so many different aspects of what this story is, right? My life. That
yeah, and even if a studio closes, or even you know, that's a story of a studio closing.
Yeah,
totally. Like, you know, which has happened to so many.
Hey, you know what? We got to shift. We got to change. Like,
yeah,
the post today was all about change. Sometimes it's subtle, and sometimes it's huge and obvious. So
yeah. Yeah, and you're doing it all, raising kids.
Yep, raising strong girls.
No, this is amazing. And then last week, I was telling Dina at the beginning, because we had a couple scheduling things, and I was not as on top of my email as I usually am. I just had the shit show week last week. I talked about it on the podcast that just came out today. Like, it was one of those things where it was so bad for stupid reasons. Mm. Like nothing serious, like nothing seriously bad happened. Nothing I need to write home about. It was just like one thing after another after. I mean, it was the type of week where I put something really kind of important on the top of my car and just drove away.
Oh, no.
Like that stuff. Yeah. And I was like, give me a break.
Yeah.
Just give me a break. But the stuff you're talking about is big life stuff. And yeah, I'm really grateful for you, and very much so. Like a lot of my guests, I feel like we would have been besties had we met each other in life, because our lives took a very similar path in art.
Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I've met so many more of I would call them my best friends later in life than I did when I was young. And that's something I talk to my older daughter about often. Like, you're going to find your people. And your people might not show up until you're 30 or 40 sometimes. Like, but you'll find you'll find them.
And also, I feel like I've been through a couple of relationships kind of like have a natural end.
Yeah.
Because we met each other young and we didn't know ourselves yet. And we just met each other. And your lives go in different ways. And that can be painful, too.
Yeah.
Because the connection that you had was over, you know, college stuff.
Yep.
And then your life changes and it can be really challenging too. So,
yeah, because we are all different at different every day, really, truly. I mean, our cells regenerate, what, every 7 to 10 years or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, yeah. We are really, truly different people.
Yeah. Yeah. So. All right, Dina, I really appreciate you. I feel like I always offer this to my guests too, like in a year or so, let's do a check-in and let's do a...
That sounds fun.
You know, where you're at, how it was going and how it's going now. I love doing that.
Perfect. It'll be a year post-op.
Yeah, this recovery too, because I think for other women, there have been a couple women who email me and they're like, so I checked all your podcasts and it looks like this woman recovered in 9 months and this one recovered in 12. And I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of research.
Yeah, a lot of it's different for everybody. So that's, they can't tell you how long it's going to take you.
Thank you so much to Dina for joining us today and being vulnerable and telling your amazing story. We really appreciate you. In the show notes, there's that link to sign up to get Arrow Rehab, which is a 3-part video series that I will be dropping to inboxes. Sign up there. And the free mini course by Wrap Your Head Around Silks as well. I appreciate you guys. Please, if you would honor me with a 5-star rating and a review where you get your podcasts, really helps others find this podcast. And I hope you're having a wonderful week. I'll see you guys next time. This is the Expecting Aerialist.